Welcome to the Monitor Daily Podcast. It's Wednesday, April 19th. Thanks for joining us. I'm Mark Trumbull.
And I'm Jingnan Peng.
Tax Day, meet Earth Day. Earth Day, this is Tax Day. Maybe it's because I edit stories about both the economy and the environment, but this year I couldn't help but notice the proximity of these 2 days on the calendar. U.S. taxpayers were supposed to file their 2022 returns by yesterday. This coming Saturday is when protecting our planet's environment will be in focus globally. And I'm seeing a connection. Whether you're thinking about fiscal or planetary health, big issues are currently at stake. Questions of individual and collective responsibility. Most Americans do pay the taxes they owe, and most say in polls they support the Paris Agreement goal, which nations formally signed on Earth Day 2016, of addressing climate change by shifting increasingly toward clean energy sources. Yet, difficult challenges lie ahead. In coming weeks, the Monitor will be covering the U.S. fiscal imbalance. There's a partisan standoff in Congress over raising the national debt limit. And a deeper issue is fast-rising debt that neither party has successfully addressed. And we've recently documented the incomplete progress worldwide toward those Paris goals. To some extent, maintaining a strong economy and sustainable habitats are intertwined. Even though these are sometimes framed in either-or terms, it may prove hard to achieve one without the other. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen, for example, recently described climate change as an existential threat from an economic as well as a social perspective. And at a recent conference of business economists just a few blocks from the Monitor's Washington office, one fiscal expert urged bipartisan efforts to address the widening imbalance between federal spending and revenues. It's not the biggest problem out there. It's the one that weakens our ability to deal with all the others, said Maya McGinnis, president of the Committee for a Responsible Federal Budget. She sees some in Congress pointing toward possible solutions, despite polarization that is one of the biggest problems we face. And yes, the same is happening on protecting Earth's environment. In fact, amid the challenges, it's encouraging to take a lesson from the buds and blossoms that emerge around the time of Earth Day in the Northern Hemisphere each year. Under the right conditions, systems like an economy or a biosphere are resilient, more so than many might expect. Now, today's stories. Our first story. Are the pressures on Benjamin Netanyahu manageable? Just over 100 days into his newest tenure as prime minister, he is facing mounting questions over whether he can keep Israel united and secure, his extremist partners at bay, and his government intact.
Amid cratering poll numbers, mass protests in the streets, and a recent military escalation on multiple fronts, Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu sought the comfort of a friendly chat on Israel's Channel 14, considered a safe space for his messaging. Yet even there, the gravity of his and Israel's current reality broke through. It seems that something here isn't working out, said TV host and Netanyahu supporter Inon Magal last Thursday, pointing to the economy and security issues. There's a sour feeling in general. Political analysts say Mr. Netanyahu hasn't been this unpopular for over 15 years. Multiple surveys have shown voters abandoning his Likud party. Most alarming, for Mr. Netanyahu, his suitability ratings as prime minister have declined precipitously to 34%, and he is now trailing at least one centrist challenger. "It's not the same Bibi," says Ilaran, a former longtime Likud supporter who has joined the street protests against the government's proposal to overhaul the judiciary. Opposition to that move has also come from outside Israel, including from the United States and the credit rating agency Moody's. "I don't feel that he's in control. He's just sitting on the prime minister's chair," says Ilaran. "And the extremists in government are pulling the wheel." This story was reported by Neri Zilber in Tel Aviv, Israel, for The Monitor.
What does it look like to seek justice in a country that views journalists as terrorists? Kashmiri editor Fahad Shah's long detention and ongoing trial raise questions about India's approach to terrorism.
Fahad Shah appeared on video before a packed Jammu courtroom last week, looking frail and frustrated. The Kashmir Wala editor and longtime Monitor contributor stood next to Ala Fazili, author of an opinion piece published on Mr. Shah's news site 11 years ago. Police say the article provoked terrorism in the heavily militarized region. Both men are booked under the draconian Unlawful Activities Prevention Act, UAPA, India's far-reaching anti-terror law, and have been waiting months for their day in court. Proceedings lasted about 20 minutes, with Mr. Shah pleading not guilty in a statement prepared from jail. The trial picks back up May 22nd. In the meantime, Mr. Shah is one of several journalists waiting for justice under the stringent UAPA, which critics say uses national security fears to sidestep justice and silence government critics. According to the Committee to Protect Journalists, the number of incarcerated journalists in India is at a 30-year high, and the majority are being tried or investigated under UAPA. Indeed, Jita Seshu from Free Speech Collective has seen UAPA used liberally against journalists in recent years. They operate without a shred of evidence, provide little or no chance of bail, and finally, after long years of struggle, result in poor conviction rates, she says. Each instance erodes press freedom, case by case. This story was reported by Srishti Jaswal in Jammu, India, for The Monitor.
The court case between Dominion Voting Systems and Fox News reached a settlement at the last minute, but the ripple effects on the conservative network's reputation and its bottom line may continue.
Fox Corp agreed Tuesday to pay $787 million to Dominion Voting Systems to settle a defamation suit over false claims aired by Fox News about voting machines used in the 2020 election. The deal was announced on what would have been the first day of a high-profile trial in a Delaware court that was widely seen as a test of First Amendment protections for news organizations. Pre-trial revelations about how Fox fed misinformation to its viewers about the 2020 vote to maintain its ratings had already embarrassed the country's most powerful conservative media outlet, and Dominion's attorneys have claimed victory for its defense of the truth. But the settlement, among the largest ever paid by a media company, doesn't appear to compel Fox to admit wrongdoing or issue public apologies. Still, money may speak louder than words. $787 million is a pretty implicit admission of something, says George Freeman, director of the Media Law Resource Center. This is also not the end of the matter for Fox, which will have to contend with additional related lawsuits and damage to its reputation over the weeks and months to come. This story was reported by Simon Montlake for The Monitor.
Ukrainian law defines ecocide, deliberate mass damage to the environment, as a crime. Prosecutors are drawing up a case against the Russian Navy, blaming its Black Sea Fleet for a sharp spike in dolphin deaths.
War has turned a pristine white sand beach near the Ukrainian Black Sea resort town of Odessa into a crime scene. The alleged crime? Ecocide, which means deliberate mass damage to the environment and wildlife. And Ukraine is accusing Russia. Last year saw a sharp rise in the number of unexplained dolphin deaths and strandings. Local biologists partly put that down to Russian missile strikes on Ukrainian air defense batteries on the edge of the Black Sea Biosphere Reserve. But the real problem, they say, is that Russian naval vessels belonging to the Black Sea Fleet, operating from the Crimean port of Sevastopol, make constant use of acoustic sonar signals, which interfere with dolphins' natural sonar that they use as an echolocation tool. It is as if the dolphins were left without eyes or ears, says Ivan Rusev, the director of research at the Tuzli Lagoons National Nature Park, south of Odessa. They have no chance to orient themselves. They become very thin. Their immune system becomes weak. Ukraine is also gathering evidence of other environmental damage that Kyiv blames on Moscow. Burned forests and massive air pollution from bombed oil and chemical plants, among other things. One day, Ukrainian prosecutors hope to bring the Russian military to justice. This story was reported by Dominique Sogel in Odessa, Ukraine, for The Monitor.
It took creative vision to get past the stench of sargassum, but this Mexican gardener has turned the invasive seaweed into a sustainable housing solution.
Sargassum, the invasive, smelly seaweed piling up in record amounts on beaches across the Caribbean, and now Florida, isn't something most people look upon kindly. But gardener Omar de Jesus Vasquez Sanchez, who launched a cleanup service to remove the seaweed, says, "I remember thinking, there's something more here." He conceived a way to make sustainable construction blocks out of the mounting seaweed, which researchers blame on pollution, overdevelopment, and global warming. In 2018, he founded Sargablock, a company on Mexico's Yucatan Peninsula that combines the algae with other organic materials, like clay, to make the blocks. He not only sells Sargablocks to construction projects, but also builds affordable housing. Having grown up in poverty with a single mother, he says, he donates houses to women like my mother, who are doing everything in their power to make it work. Elizabeth del Carmen Bonoya Lopez, a recipient of one of his houses, sits in front of her home snuggling Chaquiste, a chihuahua named after the mosquitoes found around sargassum. She admits feeling hesitant about his offer. Was it going to smell like rotten eggs? It doesn't. And she says, now when I see sargassum piling up, I think, that's no pest. It's my roof. This story was reported by Whitney Ulick in Puerto Morelos, Mexico, for The Monitor.
Now, commentary from The Monitor's editorial board on renters and landlords as partners. 6 months into the COVID-19 pandemic, the Federal Centers for Disease Control and Prevention imposed a broad moratorium on evictions of renters. The move was meant to help stem the spread of the virus, and it was supposed to be temporary. Now it has also sparked a debate on new ways to deal with evictions in general. An average of 3.6 million eviction cases are filed each year. They come with a disproportionate effect on Black and Hispanic women. They also disrupt communities, schools, and local businesses. And they clog courts and cost tenants and landlords billions of dollars annually. As the eviction bans and other time-limited interventions have expired, eviction filings have gradually climbed back up. Proposals to set rent controls and build more affordable housing are moving through some state legislatures. The most significant changes are those that balance protections for tenants and landlords without decreasing incentives for new investments in rental properties. More landlords are embracing a mission-driven approach to providing tenants with resources to avoid eviction. Eviction has multiple drivers, but as the costly pandemic remedies for housing insecurity ebb, new measures that promote trust over adversity provide a scaffolding of compassion for communities. That's a wrap for the news. You can find the full-length versions of these stories in today's issue or at csmonitor.com/daily. For more Monitor audio, including our serial podcasts, go to csmonitor.com/podcasts. Thanks for joining us. We'll be back tomorrow with a look at affirmative action under Supreme Court scrutiny. Also, our daily today includes a bonus read, conversations with two women on opposite sides of the abortion debate who took part in organized discussions for years. Their experience is portrayed in The Abortion Talks, a documentary, which is being released and shown in coordination with the National Week of Conversation. Today's Christian Science Spiritual Perspective contributor shares how God's comforting, healing love brings freedom from grief. You can find the column in today's issue or at csmonitor.com/daily. We want to give a quick thanks to our staff, including today's audio production team, Tim Malone, Jeff Turton, and Sarah Lang.
This podcast is produced by the Christian Science Monitor in Boston, Massachusetts, USA. Copyright 2023.